Hi, my name is Mina Chitsinkaya-Rendell, and I teach at Duke, and I primarily tend to teach introductory level courses, so for students who are just entering college. So today I'm going to talk about a first year undergraduate data science course. The course is STAT 112FS. I'll get to what that FS means in a little bit, and the title of the course is Better Living with Data Science. I had to be creative. So the audience of this course is, this is a first year seminar course for undergraduates interested in quantitative fields. I mentioned seminar there. At Duke, we define a seminar course as capped at 18 students. So I'm talking about a smaller sized class here. The description of the course reads, we use data to understand natural phenomena, explore patterns, model outcomes, and make predictions. So this is kind of the disclaimer the students see when they are choosing potentially to enroll in the course. And in terms of the skills that we hope that they acquire, we're talking about data wrangling, some exploratory data analysis, visualization, basic inference, both frequentist inference and a little bit of baby Bayes, modeling, and importantly also effective communication of results as well. And I stick with the data first paradigm as much as possible. There are a lot of technical details in this course, but we don't start any class session with saying, today I will teach you ggplot2. It's more today we have a case study from one of these data sets. Here are some data related questions we want to answer. And throughout that, we kind of feed the broccoli to them, you know, the veggies under the hood, and say, okay, you really want to learn about sports? Let's see how we can make these graphs. In terms of the assessment in the course, there are in-class team exercises. I'm not going to get too much into how we form the teams and whatnot in this talk, but I'd be happy to answer questions or talk about them later if you're interested. There's individual homework assignments. There's a midterm and a final project that they complete in teams, as well as a take-home final exam that they complete individually. So I'll talk a little bit about the computational aspect of the course for a while. So in terms of what environment they're working in R and RStudio. And my goal, and I've used this analogy before, is to get started like knife through butter. So the idea is we want to avoid local installation so that between the first time I say my odd name to them and the first visualization they make in the classroom, there is as little time as possible. Which means that if we can actually get them on the department server that we're running, we don't have to go through any installation steps, we don't have to go through any errors, and hopefully they get to that first visualization as quickly as possible. Now, one thing I will mention here is that during the class, this is kind of a little bit of we're babysitting them, right? They're in this environment, the packages they need are already installed and whatnot, and I think that's great for the beginning of the class. But I also don't want the students to be leaving the class, getting, say, an internship over the summer or a research assignment over the summer, saying I have all of these skills, sit down at their computer, and then they're paralyzed. I'm like, oh, well, now I can't access the department server anymore. What do we do? So I think it's important to also provide some instructions on and help with local installation towards the end of the class when they're not so scared of stuff anymore, saying you can now take this with you. We also have the students work in R Markdown, and there are a few reasons why we do that. Well, the noble goal for it, I would say, is reproducibility. I work with a lot of researchers where I'm trying to convince them to change their workflow. That's such a hard battle. This is an easier battle. You just teach them this, and then you don't teach them anything else, and then they don't have any other way of doing data analysis. In terms of the pedagogy, the R Markdown paradigm actually represents a really nice thing. It's your code and your output and your prose, your interpretations are all in one place. Even if the students wanted to separate them, they couldn't. There's absolutely no way of doing that. So they're seeing their code and the output constantly together, and I think that that tends to help with learning. And syntax highlighting, my God, there's nothing worse than just reading code in one color, I think. At least for people like me, which I think are some of them who are visual learners, where functions are one color, arguments are one color, character strings are one color. If we were to teach this to the students to do, that would be too much overhead. But all of that is built in to the R Markdown. Efficiency, I'm assuming there are a few instructors here. Here's my sales pitch. It'll make your life easier for grading, okay? Everything looks organized. And it's easy to see what the students are doing, and they're not copying and pasting random plots. and put inserting them into their work, and I think that's very helpful. Now, just like voting, knit early, knit often, okay? That's the one way to do this. I think the one thing that, one argument that sometimes makes me pause is, okay, we're learning, teaching them R, do we also have to teach them R Markdown? And I think if we think of this as an additional thing they're learning, I get the point. It is one more thing we're teaching them. But by knitting early and often their work, so compiling as they go, they don't actually have to debug a whole, you know, hundreds of lines of code at any point, and I think that tends to help. We also have the students work in GitHub or with Git and GitHub, and I'll talk through a little bit about why and then also the how of this. So version control is important. I shouldn't have to tell to this group why version control is important, but why is it important for people who are just learning coding? They make lots of mistakes, okay? And they work in teams, and then one of them goes to bed and the other one at 2 a.m. completely messes something up, and then the next morning I just want to be able to say, don't you worry, we can go back. This is not a problem. So the ability to revert is extremely helpful. It's a platform that removes barriers to well-documented collaboration. Now, Google Docs is a great platform for collaboration. Documentation, on the other hand, having to tag every change you made, that's not really built in there. So I find that if anybody is changing the work within a team, that they have to say why with a commit message is very helpful. Accountability, from my perspective, as the grader and the instructor, I see within a group project exactly how much student A versus student B did with their commit messages, and that's really helpful. And the other thing is, one might be thinking, yeah, okay, great, GitHub is fine, but do we really have to have it in the first class? And my answer is, why not? Mastery takes time. The earlier they start, the better they're going to be when they get to their senior thesis. Additionally, you try telling a first-year undergraduate who has been through hell that year that no, they're not ready for that internship. They want to put this on their resume, and it looks good, and it helps them with, let's say, a research assignment they get over the summer or an internship that they're trying to market themselves for. Now, the how, I use a similar method to what Colin was describing with some considerations around FERPA and whatnot. We have a course organizations with private repositories inside them, and that's either one repo per student per assignment or per team per assignment, so you can create teams within them. Those teams can change throughout the semester, so that provides flexibility for logistics of your course. We use it through the RStudio interface, and because they're running RStudio on the server, they don't also have to install Git locally on their computer. That would be something else I help them with later in the class if they want, but at least day one, we're not dealing with that. And we use Teams for collaboration. This is GitHub Teams for their collaboration. For assigning individual students to repos, that's one way to make one repo available to only one student. And also for the graders, so myself and the two TAs that I had for this class last semester, we were a grading team and we would go in and leave feedback as that team. In terms of the assessment of the student work, we check their reproducibility by cloning and then compiling their work. And then also we give feedback through issues. We haven't really been doing feedback through pull requests except for maybe things that are very obvious, because I'm always wanting to just have them do it based on instructions as opposed to me going in and fixing it for them. But that's definitely a possible workflow. So on day one, I'm not going to have you read through all of this, but on day one of class, we actually have them start with some repository that I've, you know, put together that only has one README file in it. Edit the README file on GitHub, on the web, try to commit and push, and there's going to be merge conflicts, and then we try to resolve them as quickly as possible. That's how we get them to get started. A bit of lessons learned. If you plan on using Git in your class, start on day one. Don't wait until the right time. I think it's like having kids. There's no good time for it. But I'm told that when you have them and then you go through sleepless nights and then one day you're like, aha, this is good. So that day comes. The first time I taught this class, I said, next week I'm going to do it. 15 weeks later, I didn't. So just do it at the beginning. First assignment, I had my first assignment be a team assignment. Bad idea. day one of learning Git and merge conflicts where they have to resolve for their work, I think that's not great. I think individual works better. Students need to remember to pull before starting their work if they're working on team assignments. They always forget that, so it's important to try to remind them that. And I think it's impossible to avoid shell intervention every once in a while, so they would be like coming to my office saying, oh, we messed this up really bad, and I'll copy, you know, Git commands from Stack Overflow, cross my fingers, act like I know what I'm doing. And that's not really a good thing, so that's the one thing I wish was a little bit different. But it also shows them the humane side of, you know, I am not so sure either, but hopefully we'll make this work. And one thing that's important is students, if this is their new normal working on Git and GitHub, the whole idea of this is a private repository, they forget about that by day two. And then they might be wanting to use this paradigm for their future work. But I think it's important to let them know not to push anything on GitHub before approval from any PI they're working with and whatnot, because everything is public and sometimes they tend to forget about that. I'm going to show you one of the sample exercises in the interest of time from this class. So they scrape data from a website. I'm at Duke, can't resist basketball, so that's where we send them. And they clean the data, mostly with dplyr, and then they visualize the data with ggplot2 and Shiny. So these are four packages I've taught them along the way. This was a fun exercise for them because they get to bring in something they tend to be interested in, which is basketball, into the classroom. One thing I'll mention is sometimes this happens. I'd like to point you to the date. That's Thanksgiving. That was when the homework was due. And then that website went down. And now you have to deal with students whining about, well, we can't do our homework. So I think if you're working with stuff like this, you got to be, you know, living on the edge and willing to make adjustments as you go. I'm going to skip over this example real quick and talk about the interest and impact. That FS, that was at the end of the course number. So this is part of the focus program at Duke where students opt in to take a cluster of courses, and this was in the modeling cluster. So these are students who have wanted to be in a quantitative field coming in. I tried to ask for interest in this cluster compared to all the other clusters that are offered by Duke, a lot of which are humanities. I was told I did not have access to the data. However, definitely significant increase in applications in the last 2 years than previous years. I'm a statistician. I won't make causal claims, but that's how long the class has been around. In terms of the interest in the data science course, in 2015, 76% of the applicants to this cluster said they wanted to take this class over the others in the cluster. 2016, that's people coming in next year, 83%. And in terms of your pipeline, so this is my pipeline to the statistical science major. In the cluster, we have courses from math, CS, evolutionary anthropology, sociology, all modeling related. Of the students who are in my 2014 class, 19% have already declared to be statistical science majors. Of the students who will be declaring next year, 38% in the class have expressed interest in the stats major. In terms of curricular changes that this class has prompted, we plan to offer a similar course as our gateway course to the major starting in the 2017-2018 academic year. And the last point I want to make, which I think is interesting, is the gender distribution in this class. So over the 2 years that I've taught this class, I had 44 or 50% females, compared to the 20%, 25% roughly females in our current gateway class, which is probability theory. So I hope that if you're familiar with like women in STEM type of literature, often it's mentioned that application type classes tend to be attractive to females. I hope this is kind of making efforts in the right direction. If you're interested in the class materials or the slides, you can find them at this address. You can find me at one of these, or I'm happy to chat after the session as well. Thank you.
So, questions? Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're too scared to ask on Stack Overflow. I'm scared to ask on Stack Overflow. I have mentioned it to them. Honestly, the way I have talked about Stack Overflow has been more not for asking questions, but actually for receiving information and how to cite any code that you're getting. And that is allowed in the class. I think claiming otherwise would be somewhat unrealistic. We also do mention to them that they cannot ask a question that would specifically be doing their homework for them.
Yes, please.
None. It is possible a few of them may have taken AP computer science, but they are learning R for the first time in this class, and potentially any programming language for the first time. So if you look at the content of the class that I've mentioned in terms of the statistical content, that is very similar to your routine introductory statistics class, EDA, inference, modeling. Yes, so we teach them R in 15 weeks and that content to a level, obviously, to the level that would be piping them into the second regression class. That's the goal, statistical goal that I have. The computational goal is competency with R and, you know, experience with using Git as version control.
So we have time for the last question. If we have one.
Oh, what was the question? In terms of, so there are some components that are team-based, and in that, the team gets the score that we assign, but there's also peer evaluation that they do amongst them in case we need to redistribute, and the individual components are graded individually, and then there's a grade distribution for how each of these are weighted.
Let's pick mine again.